I'm Hannah Forden for Heritage Radio Network on tour here at Good Food Mercantile in Brooklyn. Our coverage here today is supported in part by the Julia Child Foundation for Gastronomy and the Culinary Arts. I am super excited to sit down with Charles Wechselbaum of Charlie's Cochina. He is showing his beautiful meats with us today, and he's a good friend of the network. Thanks for sitting down with me, Charles.
Thank you for having me.
So do you prefer to be called Charles or Charlito?
Whatever you feel comfortable with.
I was reading a little bit about your background, and I think I would love to hear about how you being raised in a Cuban-American household, studying cooking at the French Culinary Institute, and then going to Spain and learning how to make cured meats. That's a lot of really amazing gastronomic cultures coming together. So I'd love to hear how that came to be and how it's influenced the flavors and the styles in which you make your product.
Yeah, I mean, growing up in New York is such a melting pot. And so, I grew up in a Cuban-American household, but only because my father was Cuban and my mother was American. And we were always surrounded by so many different cultures. So I always say I'm just a mixed-up guy from New York. My father's actually a Cuban-Jewish guy, so we had the Jewish influence and the Cuban influence, and it was just all over the place. And so we've sort of embraced this identity of New York, which is mixed, which is like kind of just whatever. What makes the New York identity is the melting pot identity. It's the there's no such thing as native New York. New York is so. I think that laid a really great foundation to just like keep an open mind about food and not be too attached to any one thing in particular, and just like appreciate things from all over the world. And then when I got into cured meats, I was just fascinated by the way that you could transform this highly perishable thing, which is raw meat, into something that makes it, do the opposite of perish by leaving it in the zone where it's most prone to perishing, 50 degrees, 60 degrees. I mean, conventional wisdom dictates that the meat should go bad. But with the curing process, with the right combination of salt and thyme and humidity and environment and all this, make it do the opposite. That whole thing was just fascinating to me. And I was lucky to spend some time in Spain with somebody who I know there. And we just were like knocking around on all these jamón and chorizo producers. And I didn't realize how close the culture of charcuterie makers there are. So most people just didn't let us in. But a couple of them did, and we got an inside look on how some of this really amazing charcuterie is made. And then when I came back to the States, I was able to start working in an old salumeria, like an old Italian salumeria, that was helping us get our production started. And the lead production guy there had been doing it for, he was actually a guy from Mexico, but he'd been making salami for like 18 years, and he was like unbelievably amazing at it. And super humble, super soft-spoken, didn't say much, just did it. And if I was doing something wrong, he'd like grab my arm and say like, no, or he'd just like give me an eye and go like, oh, you're going to ruin that. Like, that's not going to come out well.
So it sounds like you had to earn a lot of people's trust to get to where you are today. You had to win over the Spanish charcuterie makers. You had to, apprentice under this Mexican gentleman making Italian meats. So you somehow managed to convince them that you were worthy of their secrets.
Yeah, I guess that's what a lot of life is, right? Like earning people's trust. But I was also very lucky that people gave me a chance. Like the guy who I worked with here in the States, I mean, and his boss, they totally rolled the dice on me. I just called them up one day and said, hey, come in and teach me how to do this, and like let me start this crazy project that I have. And and they weren't the first people I asked that to, and I'd spent like 6 months asking a bunch of people that same question, and well, everybody said no, which is why I was continuing asking. And so these people, I was very lucky that really wonderful people gave me a chance. So it's trust and luck.
Yeah, that's life. So did you have a love for cured meats and charcuterie before you spent time in Spain, or is that something that you grew to love by being immersed in that culture?
Yeah, I think it was right before I went to Spain, being in the French Culinary Institute, and I also was working in a restaurant. I lived for a period of time in Durham, down in North Carolina in Durham, and I had a chef that I worked for down there who was just really experimental and creative, and he was doing a lot of charcuterie in his kitchen. So I think my interest in charcuterie came during that period, like 2008, 2009. But I didn't really know what it was when I was younger. I mean, it's just prosciutto and, chorizo here and there, but like real charcuterie, it was something that I was introduced to later on. So,
And obviously we're here at Good Food Mercantile, which is a super inspiring place to be, meeting so many small producers. I'd love to hear kind of how you are catering your products to these like very specialized buyers, and what kind of sets apart this community of retailers from the market at large, because I think they are very discerning and also really supportive of small producers, which is a really lovely thing to see.
I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, they're really so supportive and we're very lucky that our core customer base are people who come to this show, because our ride has not been smooth, and the only reason that we're still alive today is because our customers were patient with us and supportive of us and encouraging when we made mistakes and did things that caused them to suffer in some sense as well. Instead of sort of retaliating and telling us all these kinds of, making judgments on us and all that stuff, they were actually very helpful and were patient and said, encouraging, hey, it's okay, we all make mistakes. As long as you learn from it, as long as you, make it better the next time. And sort of like people are very embracing of failure, knowing that it's really the only way to get good at something and continue on. So I'm incredibly grateful for this group, and people here really love food, and they just plain and simple, they believe in cooking, they believe in knowing where your food comes from, they believe in the responsibility that a food producer has to the consumer to like let them know what they're eating, and they all take that responsibility very seriously, and so we're very lucky to have them. So yeah, hope that answers your question.
Yeah. And you are the recipient of several Good Food Awards. Is that right? So tell me a little bit. We can call that.
Two blues and two reds. So two finalists and two winners.
So tell me about the winning products and what you feel sets it apart.
Yeah. We won one for our Campo Seco in 2018, which I was extra proud of, because Campo Seco is our foundation salami. It's the foundation for all of our products, just salt and pork. I call it the mother salami, and usually it's like the purest expression of the two most fundamental ingredients in the process. We use really great meat and really great salt in our product. We use a hand harvested solar evaporated sea salt, which is like a spice in its own, in addition to being the main preservation agent in salami. So it's our slowest moving product, because out in the market, it tends to get lost in the shuffle of all these crazy flavor profiles and spice mixes. And like, when you put a product out there that's just like really, I dare say simple, but just humble, I guess. It tends to get lost in the mix, or tends to not get as much attention, some of the stuff with more sex appeal. So to get the Good Food Award for it was so validating. And because it's the foundation for all of our products, it meant that everything else had a good foundation. It was validating for the whole line, so I was super proud. And the other one was for the Cerveza Seca in 2014, the beer salami. We're really excited to partner with a local brewery here in New York, Transmitter Farmhouse Ales, producing a really great, they produce a variant or a variation of a seasonal beer that they do. It's their Belgian style quad ale. It's an Abbey style quadruple ale that they make for us, and it's just so delicious. It's very rich. It's like caramelly and malty and beautiful. It's the kind of beer you drink, you know, next to a fire in the winter time. You know, comes in a big 750 ml bottle with a cork top, and you can, yeah, it's just awesome. And so it highlights the partnership. Yeah, what can I say? That really proud of that Good Food Award as well. Yeah.
Okay, so you make everything here in New York, correct?
Yeah.
So paint a picture for me. Where are you? What does it look like? What does it smell like? And what is your process for testing out and creating new products?
Yeah. Oh, that's a great question. Well, every part of the production smells a little different, you know? So, you know, the beginning doesn't smell like much. It's just raw meat comes in, and then you start mixing the spices, and you get the wafts from the spice bins coming out. My favorite to smell is the pimentón that we use in our chorizo, because it's just so pungent and so beautiful. You get that smoke, you get some smokiness, and, you know, we all always sneeze a little bit when we're mixing the spices, you know, not in the spices, but, you know, so that's really nice. And then when you go into fermentation, you get almost like a bakehouse sort of smell. It's the beginning of the drying process, and we have a slower fermentation. So it's when the sort of microbial activity starts to happen, right? And the smells are just bready and yeasty and, yeah, really, really nice and meaty. It's like the beginning of the controlled spoilage. So it's like borderline, like, okay, this could go really wrong. But, you know, we most of the time it doesn't, so we're lucky about that. And then when you go into the drying room, it's just, what can I say? It's a magical smell. It's just aging meat. It's gone through the fermentation. You get a lot of yeast. It's cooler in the drying room. So it's almost like smells like fall, you know? Yeah, you should come.
Okay. Deal.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you mentioned sometimes, you know, you're walking that fine line between curing and spoiling. Has there ever been something you've tried and has not turned out to be delicious?
So many times, yeah. Many, many, many times. Yeah, we've had to make plenty of mistakes. And, you know, the best learning comes from screwing up. So it's not fun to do it. It's not fun when it happens. But in retrospect, it's really important. We've messed up plenty of times. And you asked the question about developing new products. Oh, man. It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like writing, you know. If you try too hard, you're always crossing out and going back and scribbling and rewriting. And, like, you can spend 3 hours and write one paragraph, you know. And it's writer's block, and you can't get it right. But when it hits you, you can just write, you know, a whole chapter in half an hour. And because it just flows, and that's the way I feel about creating new products. Like, if you have a rush of inspiration, you get the spices, you mix them up. I mean, like, we have a good baseline for how to do, like, the foundation of the product, like with fat and lean ratios and like salt ratios and stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, it usually happens pretty quickly, but, like, when you get a rush of inspiration, you really have to capitalize on it when it happens, because otherwise you lose it. So yeah, I don't know.
And you have to wait a while till you can actually taste the finished product, right? Which must make it a little bit torturous.
It's just one of the more. I mean, it's one of the most beautiful parts about the process, because it really forces you to be patient, which is an important quality. But it's also very frustrating, because, you know, it's June now, and if we want to release something in December for Christmas, for example, and we haven't done it already, it's not going to happen this year. It's part of the process, you know?
Yeah. Well, I will let you get back to your busy table, but thanks so much for joining us. And if anyone would like to taste some of Charlie Toscochina, you can come to Heritage Radio Network's gala coming up this fall. So be sure to check that out. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Thank you, Hannah. This was great. Keep up the great work, Heritage.